Social distancing remains the order of the day, and the coronavirus pandemic is bringing out the best in so many of us and sadly the worst in others. Today on Moral Heritage. Okay, welcome back to Moral Heritage. It's been way too long since I've done a podcast. It's really interesting how in this time of coronavirus, when people are sheltering, things can be incredibly busy at the same time. Well, especially with Passover coming on. But so here we are in the middle of Passover and watching what's going on with coronavirus. And I want to talk today about how a time of crisis like this, you can watch it bringing out the best in people and the worst in people. And we all have a lesson, obviously, to learn from all this, because obviously we'd like to be among those for whom a crisis like this brings out our best. Look first and foremost at what is going on in ICUs and emergency rooms all over the country. The selfless dedication of people who are working extra shifts, risking their lives. Volunteer ambulance companies like Hatsala and others, where they could stay home if they wished. In fact, one of the smaller ambulance services in New Jersey had to suspend operations because so many of their volunteers got sick with the virus. And now hopefully they've reopened, because once people recover, they can go back to helping others. But it's incredible watching the selflessness, and it's a really beautiful thing. But it's not just what's going on in the emergency rooms and in the hospitals. Look at Elon Musk of Tesla. Now, it's one thing for the government to say, okay, we're going to use the War Powers Act and require auto manufacturers to manufacture ventilators. But Elon Musk said, I'm going to produce them for free, and we're going to give them away. And that's what he's doing. And by the way, where did he get the design for a ventilator? I mean, this is a guy who makes cars. He got the design from the Medtronic company, because the CEO of Medtronic's Israel division, Yaron Yitzhari, said, we're going to give away our patented design for a ventilator because it's more important that lives be saved. He gave away the design, his patented design, which is obviously worth many millions of dollars. Elon Musk is giving away ventilators, which are worth many millions of dollars. The owner of the New England Patriots sent the team's private plane off to China in order to pick up and ship a million of these N95 masks. These are the more sensitive, more tightly filtering masks that they need to use in hospital environments, to bring them back to the United States for the state of Massachusetts, and 300,000 out of the million were sent to New York. And not only did he do this flight at his own expense, but he paid for half the cost of the masks also. I mean, that's incredible. It's incredible work. There's an organization called Samaritan's Purse that set up an entire field hospital in Central Park because there's this urgent need for more hospital beds. And I heard recently that there's a Jewish school that's also being converted for use as an emergency hospital, just to deal with the number of cases that there are now in the New York area. And you look at this and you say, wow, you know, the best of humanity is coming out. And it's incredible to watch that happen. And what's sad is you watch so much more going on that seems to be on the other side of, you know, when people are struck with a crisis, they instead either try to take advantage of it or, well, no, they take advantage of it. I don't think there's an or. I think it's all about taking advantage of the crisis for personal gain. The guys who hoard masks, hand sanitizer, et cetera, to be able to sell them for exorbitant prices, that's apparently illegal to corner the market. I'm not sure what the legal offense is, but it is, because they can, you know, they try to corner the market and then take advantage of the situation that people are in. But you also find, you know, more innocuous example is the people who can't get past political partisanship right now. I find this really incredible. I had somebody tell me, I mean, literally, that Donald Trump told people to just go on with their lives. Actually, that's a quote from Bill de Blasio in March. And it was Nancy Pelosi going out to the Chinese New Year festivals and others in New York saying, oh, yeah, let's keep doing everything normal. In fact, Joe Biden twice called out Trump's xenophobia when Trump referred to the Chinese virus and said we're going to ban all flights from China and quarantine people coming in. Now, PolitiFact would like you to believe that it's mostly false that Biden was referring to the travel ban. But, oh, yeah, really? Kind of coincidental that Trump announces a travel ban from China and immediately Biden says the way to get past a crisis like this is not the xenophobia of Donald Trump. Hello. It was absolutely true that Biden said that it was all xenophobia. So we would be in an unimaginably worse place if Biden had been in charge. That's the first thing you learn from that lesson. And I'm not saying that politically. I'm saying that because Biden told us so. He said, I wouldn't be banning people from China. He would not have done these European travel bans, etc. But, you know, it gets worse than that. People immediately leap on Anthony Fauci saying that knowing what we know now, if we had gone back in time, in a time machine to January, February, of course we could have saved more lives. Well, that's absolutely true. But we didn't know things. The New York Times, which now wants to blame this all on Trump, in early March called Anthony Fauci the ultimate expert in this field. The article is entitled, it's a hagiography. You've got to read it. Not his first epidemic, Dr. Anthony Fauci sticks to the facts. Where politicians fumble and other government health officials step back, he steps up to explain. This is from March 8. They call him the nation's leading expert on infectious diseases. And the point is that he's the scientist. He's actually been in his position since the Reagan administration back in the 1980s, which means he worked under Bill Clinton. He worked under Donna Shalala, who was the head of Health and Human Services under Bill Clinton. And Shalala said that it's the scientists and physicians that are the credible people to the American public, not politicians. I used to make him wear his white coat when talking to the public. Used to make them all wear their white coats so people were reassured that they are real doctors. And she said, Tony is playing the same exact role that he has in the past to make sure the science is accurate and clear. Now, all of this is March 8 in the New York Times. Well, in late February, this is the guy who told us the risk from COVID-19 in the United States is just minuscule. Now, that's not his fault. It's not his fault. The Chinese were misinforming everybody. They were telling people that the transmission is from animal to human, not from human to human, or that it's extremely difficult for one person to infect another. And Fauci has said this more recently, that it was because of Chinese misinformation that he said the risk to Americans is just minuscule. But that was the best medical advice that we had at the time. You don't shut down the entire economy because there's a risk that is minuscule. You shut down the economy because there's a real risk that you see and a real danger, because otherwise people won't tolerate it. You know, there's people running around now saying, how dare the United States shut us all down and tell us to stay home? We're supposed to have liberty and pursuit of happiness. Well, guess what? You're supposed to have life first. And if you are a danger to others by running around, yes, they have a right to tell you it's illegal for you to be running around because you're a danger to others when you do so. Absolutely. And that's not a political thing. But obviously, the politicians, beginning with Donald Trump, but on down from there, they all had to deal with political realities. And dealing with political realities require that you shut down only when you know that there's really a situation going on that cannot be resolved otherwise. And given the lack of accurate information coming out of China, there's no opportunity over here for using 2020 hindsight to say, oh, you see, if we would have done it this different way, then obviously it would have worked out better, and therefore it's Trump's fault. We already know that Biden would have done a worse job. We already know that. But at the same time, we know that this is not a crisis that is being solved politically. It's being solved by doctors. And the doctors are telling us this is the best way to operate. And the doctors are also operating on the best information we had. And yeah, I mean, obviously that's ameliorated by the political considerations and the flat out economic considerations. I mean, you can't have people starving in the street. This is, you know, without a $4 trillion stimulus, I said, we're not going to keep the economy going after this crisis. You can't do that every, you know, just on a whim. If we had done that for SARS, for example, it would have been a horrible overreaction, even though SARS was also infectious and also potentially deadly. It just wasn't on the same scale. And we didn't know that because the Chinese weren't giving us accurate information. So let's stop making this political. But it gets even worse. I mean, people are using this to wage their war on religion and all things good under the sun. Mike Pence gets put in charge of the coronavirus task force, and he starts the meeting with a prayer, and they mock him for starting the meeting with a prayer. Look, I've been to any number of meetings on Capitol Hill that started with a prayer. Every day in Congress, they start with an invocation. They have a member of the clergy step to the front of the room, up on the podium, where the speaker stands, and deliver a benediction, invocation. I'm not sure exactly the term that they use, but it happens every day in the Congress of the United States. So this idea that starting a meeting with a task force means, oh, you see, we're all doomed. They only think all they're going to do is pray. They're not going to actually help the country. They're not going to. It's ridiculous. Come on. It's silliness. And it's just part of this warfare on religion. I mentioned before the Samaritan's Purse organization setting up a field hospital. NBC New York says it's controversial that they're setting up this hospital. This hospital is controversial because the Samaritan's Purse organization is led by, first of all, they have anti-LGBTQ policies. Because they're led by Franklin Graham, the son of the late Billy Graham, who's, you know, hateful towards LGBTQ. No, he's not. I mean, first of all, you know what their example of his hate is? He believes that a baker, think Jack Phillips in Colorado, he thinks that a baker should not be forced to bake a cake to celebrate a gay marriage that offends his personal religious beliefs. Forcing a person to participate in an activity is not tolerance. It's not acceptance. And it's not he who is hateful, it is you. If you are forcing somebody else to participate in an event, it's not about, by the way, it was completely, I mean, they lie about this routinely. They'll say, he refuses to bake a cake for an LGBTQ person. That's false. It's completely a lie. If the guy was celebrating a birthday, he'd be very happy to bake him a cake and has nothing to do with the fact that he's LGBTQ or his ethnicity, his religion, his national origin, none of the above. No discrimination whatsoever. But he says, I can't bake a cake and I don't care who the person is who I'm baking it for, but I can't bake a cake and put my artistry into celebrating something that I don't believe is something to celebrate. That's a matter of personal belief. That's a matter of an activity. to allow a person to decline to participate in your chosen activity is anything but hateful. For you to force somebody to participate, that is. And what's amazing is that this is not the time for this debate at all. We're talking about setting up a field hospital. Samaritan's Purse, whatever you believe, whether you believe that their activities are hateful or not, are they going to take in LGBTQ patients? Yes, they are. They're going to take in anybody who needs a hospital bed because of this horrible virus, and they're going to try to heal them. But the political activists would like you to believe that that's controversial. They would like you to believe that there's something wrong with this. It would be better for them, in other words, not to set up this field hospital. Let somebody else set up the field hospital. And if nobody else will, oh, okay, so people will die in the street instead. That's a better outcome than us allowing Central Park to be taken over by an anti-LGBTQ activist to set up a field hospital. I mean, that's literally where they've gone with this. And it's, you know, this is the kind of insanity that should have no place in the public discourse right now. But that was hardly the only example. The president holds a press conference and brings up Mike Lindell, the CEO of MyPillow. Now, I don't understand, for just personally, how a pillow company, MyPillow, turns into such a big deal. But it does. And Mike Lindell does happen to be a big Trump supporter. And he also converted 75% of the company's manufacturing capacity to producing face masks instead of pillows. Now, that's another incredible act right on line with Elon Musk. And the president calls on him to speak. And he stands up there. And he, as a private citizen, he goes off script and says to all of us, I encourage you to use this time at home to get back in the Word. Read our Bibles and spend time with our families. And I literally, you go out there and you literally find people saying that was a violation of the First Amendment. Because here a private citizen who had the mic at the White House said, we ought to be reading our Bibles. If you know anything about the Founding Fathers, you know anything about the principles this country was founded upon, that is the idea that that is a First Amendment violation, clearly you know nothing about this country's history. You know nothing about the people who put this country together. You only know that you hate religion. And the idea that a private citizen would suggest we read the Bible, that's a First Amendment violation, that's you hating on religion. And again, it has no place. Whether or not the guy should have said a message that was about his own faith and own belief, I look, personally, I'm a rabbi. I don't believe what he believes. I don't have a problem with him saying what he believes. He's a private citizen. But you certainly can't call it a First Amendment violation because he was a private citizen saying his own opinion. It wasn't a, you know, officially endorsed message from the White House, much less a prescription. Again, you know, to start a meeting saying, let us pray, does not require people to pray to even to a matter of praying to a particular God. It's not a matter of preaching a particular religion. It's certainly not endorsing a particular national religion, which is exactly what the First Amendment prohibits. So it's completely unreasonable. And this hatred towards religion, it's certainly, obviously, not the time for all of this. And I actually have a whole set of examples. It's going to turn into a separate podcast under its own title because of the amount of anti-Semitism that has come up as a result of the virus. I mean, these photos of Orthodox people not following the distancing rules as if they were the only people doing it. I mean, you go out to the parks and you see people way too close together. They had to take down the baskets from the basketball courts because people were still playing 5-on-5 basketball until they took them down. I mean, this is, it's craziness to only look at one community as if that community is breaking all the rules. The Orthodox community did a lot of very aggressive early testing, especially because of the New Rochelle case that kind of started off a lot of the cases in New York in the Jewish community. And the Jewish community being very social, I mean, this is before anything was closed down on the Purim holiday, everybody's interacting with everybody else. And so what happened was there was an obvious, a lot of early spread in this one community, but it's hardly the only one that's being very, very, very badly hit. I mean, now with all the closure rules, the folks who still have to ride the subway, I mean, it's been terrible for the poorer communities in the Bronx and Staten Island. I mean, these are not Orthodox communities at all. They're getting hit at least as hard, and nobody's trying to blame it on them. I'm just going to give you one example of an article in this podcast, and like I said, we'll probably have room for an entire one in under its own right. But the New York Post has an article, New York City Firehouse Crippled by Coronavirus as 11 Firefighters Test Positive. They immediately blame it on the Orthodox community because they, quote unquote, the community largely ignores social distancing rules. I mean, this is entirely false. Every single senior rabbi of a senior rabbinic council on two continents, and I'm thinking about three in Israel and one here in the United States, all said, you have to stay home, you're not allowed to pray in the synagogue, you're not allowed to go to study in a study hall. I mean, these are social communities where everything happens together with others, and they're being told suddenly, you're not allowed to do any of this. And there are people breaking those rules, 100%, and the rest of the community is calling them murderers. I mean, really, which is what they are, accurately. But the idea that the entire community should be tarred for this is completely ridiculous. And then they say, you know, they were responding to crowded places of worship, schools, and mikvahs. You know what a mikvah is? It's a ritual bath. It's never that crowded. And I don't know how often people call the fire department to come put out a fire in a swimming pool. You can tell me the building has a mikvah in it. Okay, I get it. But to say that the mikvah is the problem, the mikvah is a swimming pool. Yes, it may have spread the virus, but the idea that this is why firefighters caught the virus, I'll tell you, there's actually a little sign down here. There's a fellow named Omar Sattar, who is a New York firefighter, who said that when he was out inspecting, all on his own, he was inspecting fire hydrants, a group of three Hasidic boys came over, and one of the teenagers deliberately sneezed on him. And that's why he got coronavirus. Now, let's just go back a little bit. Omar Sattar's father is currently in prison for a conspiracy to commit an anti-Semitic terror attack. And the son defended the father. So he defends his father, the hateful anti-Semite. And then when nobody else is looking, when nobody else sees this happen, he claims that three Hasidic boys came over and one of them sneezed on him on purpose to give him COVID-19. The only thing we know factually is that he got COVID-19 and spread it around the rest of the firehouse. That's what we actually know. And the idea that we're just going to take at face value with no investigation whatsoever, we're just going to say it's all the community's fault, the community's not following social distancing rules, and it's all because these three Hasidic boys sneezed on this Arab firefighter whose father is currently in jail. And the son defends the father for conspiracy to commit an anti-Semitic murderous terror attack. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You're going to blame the entire community rather than examine this guy's story. Don't you think you should actually check if it was factually accurate or not? And one little tidbit of information. Just days before he came up with this rather outlandish accusation, a supporter of the Muslim Brotherhood in New York is on a YouTube video telling people in Egypt to go sneeze on al-Sisi's people if they turn out to have the virus. In other words, this advice, go sneeze on somebody to transmit COVID-19, was preached by a Muslim Brotherhood supporter in New York days before. Scant days later, Omar Sattar comes down with COVID-19 and says, somebody sneezed on me. It was Jews. Jews sneezed on me. You know how many attacks on New York City firefighters or New York City police have been attributed to Orthodox Jews in the last, five decades? Really? This is nuts. It's anti-Semitic. It's evil. It's wrong. And it's a lead article in the New York Post. Well, there you have it. You know, there's with all the people who are coming out to do the best that people have to offer. And you know what? I should close by at least mentioning, and I'll link to it on Twitter. There's this wonderful photo of a group of Hasidic Jews who got together a whole series of iPads so that people who come to the hospital and are not allowed in can at least talk over the iPads and share screen time with patients inside whom they cannot visit in person. It's an unbelievable thing. It's a bunch of donated time and energy and donated iPads, all done by a group of Hasidic Jews. And that is much more descriptive of the Hasidic community than the few who were breaking the social distancing rules and who are indeed, potential murderers through their conduct. So that's all I have for you for today. Like I told you, the anti-Semitism thing is going to be enough for an entire podcast unto itself. But I hope you all are staying safe. For those for whom it's relevant, enjoy the rest of the Passover holiday. We'll be back soon with another podcast here on Moral Heritage.